Hello and welcome to our August 2016 office hours for the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and I'm excited to be here to be on call for you, to answer your questions, to coach you, to have you share some ideas or concerns you have with your clients. We are here for if you're in the insulin resistance program, you're still in the process of working through that. I'd love to hear how that's going for you. I'd love to hear how your clients are doing with it. I'd like to hear what you need support with. If you're in the clinical mastery of digestive system, same thing. Where are you at? How's it going? And how can I support you? These are things that take time to learn and to put into place. And of course, if you're in any PT, you've got access to just about everything that, and the questions are all over the map as far as what you want to ask. I'm excited to have you here. I want to welcome anybody that's new. This is a great community to be a part of. And I also want to remind every one of you that's on the call today you have two free tickets to our Shine Conference in the fall. So if you haven't already signed up, I would highly recommend you go out, shinelivebonus.com, and that will get you signed up. You can do a free ticket or you can upgrade and get the VIP and we'll feed you throughout the weekend. And if you have a colleague or a friend or someone that you'd like to bring, a business partner, just send them to that same page, shinelivebonus.com. They could sign up. We take a $97 seat deposit just to make sure that people who say they're going to come do come. And you can always put that $97 towards your VIP upgrade if you want to do that. So I would love to have you come, even if you just want to get started with the basic right now. You can add the VIP on later, and so we hold your seats. We opened up registration for it last night, and people are starting to sign up. So I anticipate over the next 2.5 months, it's going to fill. That's our goal, and that's what we're looking forward to. And it's in a lovely location, and anybody that's been to it knows. So highly recommend, if you haven't been and joined us there, go out to the page, and then you can click from there to the live sales page that has a whole page of testimonials of your colleagues just telling you what they think of it. So that said, there was, I believe, one question Lynn said was on the site. I'm going to look to see if I can find it. Yeah, so I'm going to answer. I usually like to try to start with answering the questions that have been typed in advance. So I will. And if you're on the live call and you want to ask a question or you have a case or you have a lab you want me to look at, go ahead and do a *2 on the telephone keypad. Just as a reminder, these are not calls where you can submit a full case with lots and lots of labs and I would go through it. This is more the kind of call where you have particular questions or you have a particular lab that you want me to look at, then I definitely will. These are the right calls for that. Within the NEPT, the Nutritional Endocrinology Certification Program, we have specific calls each month where you can bring a full case, and we actually only do 2 or 3 cases at the most on one of those calls, and we go into a lot more depth. So Judy, holistic nurse, says, is there any relationship with ADHD and insulin resistance? Judy, absolutely. There has been a lot of documented interaction between them, because when there's insulin resistance, the brain isn't necessarily getting all the sugar and energy that it should, and we see problems with memory, we see problems with focus, so definitely can be. Someone's insulin resistance was getting harder to control. Could that make their ADD become worse? Absolutely. Absolutely. The person I'm thinking about isn't eating junk food or chemicals and dyes and refined sugars, but is eating lots of protein and not enough vegetables. He'll eat one small salad a day. Mainly the diet is protein, organic meat, and organic pastured eggs and coffee. Well, coffee certainly affects insulin receptors and can damage them. Coffee affects the adrenals and can overstimulate them, which can affect the insulin. Protein can actually get converted into sugar, right? The branched chain amino acids, lysine, leucine, and glycine can get changed into sugar through gluconeogenesis. So that will happen. If he's under a lot of stress, that's another thing that will cause the sugar to raise. And if the insulin resistance is getting worse, then it's definitely his brain. So there's a few things that I would be looking at for him. I would definitely be having him mapping his postprandial glucoses, go ahead and have him test that. I would look at his hemoglobin A1C and see where that's at to give an idea of what his average blood glucose is. And he needs to get more vegetables because he's not getting enough of the antioxidants and he's not getting enough of the minerals and the vitamins if he's just eating a small salad a day and it's mainly protein, right? I mean, you can definitely get a good response to insulin resistance by going on a ketogenic diet. And a ketogenic diet, though, is higher in fat than protein. So it's moderate amounts of protein and carb and a lot of fat. And you can do that with coconut oil, et cetera. And you can do that therapeutically, and that can help reverse insulin resistance. It's not what I consider a long-term diet, but it certainly can happen. But a high-protein diet is, it can be like a high-sugar diet in terms of stimulating the insulin receptors and creating that. So I would be looking at all the things we teach in the program. I'd be looking at his stress levels. I'd be encouraging him to eat a lot more vegetables. How can he do it? Can he juice? Can he make smoothies? Can you get him to do soups? Can you get him to, you know, do big stir fries? But that's definitely not enough. And see what you can do about the coffee, if you can get him off of the coffee and onto something else. But if he won't go off the coffee because he gets exhausted, that's a sign he has adrenal fatigue. And he may be having cortisol spikes, which raise the blood sugar, which affects it. And, of course, look at the nutrients. So, good question. Thank you, Judy. All right, we have two hands up. We have Laura, and I have somebody I can't identify. It's a blank from with the number 336, area code 336879 is how the phone number begins. So we'll find out. It'll be our mystery guest. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hey. How are you?
I loved your pictures from Hawaii, by the way. Those are beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I enjoyed sharing them. And I've also been enjoying your couple pictures all week. It's really sweet. Really, really sweet.
Really sweet. Yes. Yeah, he's a good guy. We got good guys.
Absolutely.
I wanted to actually ask a personal question, if that was okay. If this is the right platform to ask something.
Well, if it's
like
a personal question about your health that other people could benefit from hearing the answer to, absolutely, sure.
Okay. Well, I've been struggling with some hip issues, and most recently found out that my labrum is torn in both hips. And I'm not really sure exactly how that happened because it was repaired 2 years ago with the big hip preservation surgeries that I had. Mm-hmm. But when I talked to my surgeon, he had said that it could have retorn, but more than likely there could have been an issue with the healing immediately mm-hmm. after the surgery. That, in other words, the labrum just didn't heal up correctly.
Just didn't heal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to kind of decide what to do, and I really wanted to take a conservative approach with this. So I've been doing prolozone injections where they just add in the ozone in mm-hmm. each hip, and they do work for about 3 weeks, and then the pain starts to kind of come back. Mm-hmm. So and insurance has kind of gotten to the point where they don't want to cover that anymore. I've just finished a round of physical therapy, which is really helpful, but still didn't really affect my pain much. Mm-hmm. But I'm seeing my chiropractor, and I'm doing Rolfing and acupuncture, and even some emotion code work with a friend because I feel like I just want to, like, hit all areas.
Right.
And using my oils, I'm not doing anything for pain besides, you know, applying heat or detox bath or oils or ice because I don't want to do anything to compromise my gut because I'm still healing my gut.
Absolutely.
But my question was to you, I guess, you know, I work out with a friend who's a personal trainer, and we're just noticing that there's a lot of things, any type of hip flexion, any type of lunge or squat or anything just really pinches the anterior aspect of my hips. And my thought was just to go ahead. I've had a confirmed MRI of the labral tear on the right, but the left was just my doctor who was doing the prolozone injections guided ultrasound. He got a really good view, and he showed me. He was like, the labrum is torn. I can see it.
Is so it all the way through torn, or is it just partially torn?
He said the left one looks like it was more severe than the right. The right showed up as a partial. mm-hmm. On the MRI. And so my thought was to just talk to my local doctor here, get an MRI of the left, so that I could kind of look and compare pre-op to post-op,
mm-hmm.
what's going on with the imaging on both hips. And then I did schedule an appointment to see my surgeon in St. Louis in October, and I figured that would give me enough time to get all the imaging done, give him all the information to look at, and also time for me to keep doing my conservative treatments,
yeah.
see if anything kind of changes. But from what I could tell with, I did some continuing education stuff to renew my physical therapy license, and I was a little disappointed because everything about hip labral tears was, because of course I had to study this. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to learn about hip pathologies for my license renewal. And everything was related to kind of conservative treatment until you get surgery and then post-op recovery. It wasn't really like, which I was kind of a little bummed about. I was like, really? I'm a physical therapist. Isn't there other things?
No, but
do?
You know, tears are tough, right? Because you've got to be able to
yeah.
do something to put them back together. It's one thing to have a strain, a stretch, something that's, you know, that collagen support, of course, comes to mind. You've got to be doing some good collagen support, making sure you have all the amino acids that you need to create the new collagen. So I would look at that. You could do a collagen supplement. You could do, you know, the lysine, what's the other one? Proline and hydroxyproline, the vitamin C, and certainly bioflavonoids and all to keep the inflammation down, because pain is related to inflammation. The inflammation is related to the tear and the wear and tear on the joint. So I would support the collagen
oh, yeah.
production for sure. And are they looking at repairing it or doing a hip resurfacing or a replacement? What's the deal at this point?
He had said, because he had checked for impingement, I did have CAM and pincher impingement in both of my hips, probably related to that adult hip dysplasia. So they had been and repaired all of that. So he told me, Laura, I do not think it would be another osteotomy. I really think that we would just do a scope and go in and repair the labrum. He said, we can definitely double check again to see if there's any impingement issues going on and correct those with a scope. So that was good news, because in all honesty, I think I have a little bit of PTSD. I mean, those are such big surgeries, and I,
yeah. you just had one in December, right?
I haven't had a surgery in over a year, which is
oh.
really amazing. They did a hardware yeah, removal.
Oh, that's right. That's why you were, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah so they did the hardware removal because my hip was bothering me, and I thought it was the hardware. And so we were like, let's take out the hardware and see. And, you know, it just kind of lingered. My functional medicine doctor wanted to try a PRP injection. Mm-hmm. And when I did research on it, it had really good evidence with, like, Achilles tendonitis type stuff or in the shoulder. I really didn't see much for the hip labrum. And they're really expensive. They're like $600, and insurance doesn't cover it at all. Mm-hmm. And I got on some support groups and asked people who had them in their hip, and the feedback wasn't so great. A lot of people said they didn't really help them. So I'm kind of not – I don't know. I wasn't sure if you guys had experience with PRP or –
I don't, but I have a colleague who does. Robin Benson, do you know her? She's an acupuncturist, doctor of oriental medicine in Taos, I think, New Mexico. She's in New Mexico somewhere, and she has a big clinic with multi-doctors. She's been doing it for years, and I know she does Prolo and she does PRP, but I don't know about hips. I mean, I could certainly shoot her a message on Facebook and ask her if she's ever had good results with it on the hips. To see what her experience is. She's out in New Mexico. But I personally don't know. I mean, it's not within my training. I haven't been trained in any of that. I think it is in my scope, but I got trained in California where it wasn't in my scope. So a lot of the things that are in my scope now that I'm in Texas, I can't do because I never got trained in. So
I haven't, like, reached a point where I feel like I got to go back into surgery. And I more just wanted to make this appointment with my surgeon to just kind of pick his brain and to be like, you know, looking at this and looking at the degree of the tears, in his opinion, could it cause more damage by waiting? Like, could this cause some degeneration?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Kind of get some guides there. I guess I was just wondering, is there any other things that you would suggest or that
yeah.
I could do? Or
so I would say the high dose vitamin C. Any, I don't know if you've gotten any IVs of vitamin C. I know you had some IVs of some other
yeah,
things.
Yeah, I'm doing them weekly. Very high dose
okay.
vitamin C.
Okay,
magnesium, B vitamins. Fascinating. I was having all this like bruising, really bad bruising on my legs, and since doing the high dose kind of Myers cocktail, that's gone away.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah, that'll definitely help with the repair. So that tells me that there's in some internal collagen support as well, because the stuff you could see, which is the bruising, is improving. I would say too. You know, it depends on how far the tear is, right? So you always run the risk of, if there's a partial tear, that not getting it repaired, you run the risk of doing some minor thing that normally would not hurt but would tear it all the way through. So that's the issue. But pain is generally, a lot of times the pain is, you know, from being a physical therapist, a lot of times the pain is not related to what you see on the MRI. You know, you have people
mm-hmm.
who are perfectly fine, and you do an MRI, and you see that they have these tears, and they have disc degeneration. You're going, whoa. Then you have people who have all this pain, and there's nothing wrong. So you can't always use that as a judge. The other thing I was thinking of, you know, in terms of pain control and other things, is have you tried oxalate removal for a while, just to see if that has anything to do with your level of pain?
I did a little oxalate diet in the past for the vulvodynia.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually didn't notice much improvement with that. I noticed way more improvement with taking out the gluten and dairy and the sugar and corn, peanuts, and soy and all that stuff. That's not something that I've done since my hip journey, so I could definitely
try. You might try it. I mean, just do 2 weeks. You'll know in 2 weeks. I mean, you know pretty quickly,
okay.
2 to 3 weeks. And I would just do that and just see. I would build up the collagen support. So look at the hydroxyproline and proline and glycine, I believe, is the third one. If you have no problem with taking, most of the collagen supplements are from animals, and you can get a collagen support that's not from animals. And I think that Pure Encapsulations might have one. Metagenics might have one. So, you know, getting a good collagen support kind of thing. You're already doing the C, quercetin, things like that, that would help with inflammation, because really it's the inflammation that causes the pain. Not really so much the tear, unless, of course, it's a periosteal thing, and then it's definitely the pain from the tear. So that's the things I would be looking at. You're doing so many of the things, right? If you came in off the street and you weren't doing anything, all the stuff that you're doing would be things that I would have in my list of recommendations. So if you haven't done the collagen and you haven't done the oxalates recently, at least give it a try.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that. I was doing a collagen powder in my smoothies for a while, several months ago, and I haven't lately. So I'll get back on that
mm-hmm.
with my green smoothies and just start adding that in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see if it makes a difference. Yeah. So
yeah.
I wish I had more to tell you. I mean, you're a wealth of information on this stuff, and you've done pretty much so much. Yeah.
Yeah, right now I'm really just trying to kind of look at it as, okay, like, it is what it is. Let's just get a lot of information and just kind of feel it out and listen to my body, and we'll just figure out what to do as we go along.
Yep,
like,
you've got the right attitude,
panic.
For sure. No panic, and you're learning, right? You just have to think of a lot of these things that happen as ways that the universe puts some learning in your path so that you can help somebody else with it later on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck with it. Keep us
Thank
posted.
You.
Just try those things and let's see. And if you see a noticeable difference in the next couple of weeks, you'll know that it was related to those things. I know low oxalates is a pain. I don't like to do low oxalates, and I don't recommend them unless it's really clear and people have tried everything else. But, you know, you probably do eat a lot of oxalates, given that you do a lot of good whole greens and chia and all that kind of stuff. So it's
yeah.
possible that that's it.
Okay. Is there a good, I'm sure there's probably one in our, like just a good list of low, I mean, I bet I could Google
There's a
that.
Lot of them. I don't even think I have put one in our thing yet. We will be getting to the low oxalate because we're starting food religions later this afternoon. And one of the diets we're going to cover is oxalates. So I will have it once we get that up. But right now I don't have that up. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And I had a class tonight at 7. I saw that it starts at, or I think my class is 6:30. It starts at 5. Yes. Do you know about, I'm going to watch as long as I can until.
Yeah, we'll be done. It's because it's just the intro. So it's going to be probably 60 to 90 minutes.
Oh, good. Because I like to stay on them live when I can.
When
so
you
that's
can.
Awesome.
Good. All right. Great. Well, good luck. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye.
So now I get my surprise visitor. Who is the next person? So if you have your hand up, I'm opening up your line. And it is, say hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
It's Stephanie from,
okay.
In France.
From the UK. Did you call in on Skype or something? Is that why there's a weird number?
No, it's on my mobile. I tried to do the local dial number, but it wouldn't work. So I've used the US one. But
okay.
I get free calls, so it's fine.
Oh, good. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to cost you a fortune.
Yeah.
You know, there is a way to get in on the phone with the link. I don't know if it works. It only works with the Chrome browser, but it does work really well. That's what I'm on. So, yeah, anyway. Okay, good. So, hi, Stephanie.
Give it a try. Hi.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I just had a Dutch test back, and it's probably not the time to go through the whole thing, but I did upload it yesterday, mm-hmm. So I don't know if you still have it, but
I'm looking right now, so give me a second. Yesterday or the day before, because there was a day earlier this week that we had our case studies and I had seen you upload it, so if it was 2 days ago.
Yes, it was the day of the, or was it 2 days?
Yep. Yeah, okay, good. It's loaded here. I know I saw it the other day. I just have to find the right folder. Lynn, if you know where it got loaded, I've been having trouble with my case study. Oh, wow, that's weird. My case study things are not sharing. We have a Dropbox folder, and Lynn puts them on Dropbox, and then they don't get shared to my computer. So I can go to my email because I did see it come in on my email. Lynn, I don't know if you downloaded Stephanie's. If you can open up your line and let me know, because if they're on Dropbox, I can open up Dropbox on the web. But it's not showing up on my computer, so I'm going to fix that.
Yeah, it should be in the NECT case studies.
Yeah,
folder.
It's empty. Yeah, it's empty on my computer. Okay, let me go on Dropbox, and I will download it. Okay, where's my Dropbox? There we go. And it would be in
NECT case studies in your Dropbox folder.
Okay, got it. NEP case studies. Okay. And I see Alma, Eleanor, Jane, and Michelle there.
I
can resend it. Does that help?
There's definitely more than this.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it. That's so weird. There's an NEPT case study submission.
Yeah, I think it's there. Yeah, case study submission. Sorry.
Okay, that's the wrong folder. I was looking in the one that said case studies. Okay, and there's one that says Stephanie M. Yes, there we go. All right, so we had your Dutch test. Okay. I'll do a screen share. So if anybody, is it okay for me to do a screen share?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm going to do a screen share. Let me, how do I open it? Okay, let me see. Let me download it. Give me a second. I love technology until it doesn't work. And it's like, come on, you know. Okay, so small. Okay, good. And then I'll open that on my computer. It'll open as a PDF. Then I can open it up on the screen share. And I'm going to say share window. Okay. Your window is now being shared. So let me make this a little bit bigger. There. Maybe not that big. Okay, so For those of you who want to see this as I go through it, it's join.me/drritamarie. Dutch tests are tests that they're relatively new. They've only been out about a year, and they've got some good stuff in them, and it basically tests for hormones. Did you test it for a particular reason to deal with a particular issue, or did you just test it for curiosity?
A bit of both. I've sort of had ongoing gut issues and sort of hormone issues. I've had adrenal exhaustion and a stage 3 adrenal in the past, so it was just to see where I was at with that. And also to see what was going on with the sex hormones more. The only issue is I had been quite regular in my cycle, and of course the month that I did this test, my period came 5 days late, so I don't know whether it throws everything off.
It could
a little
long
bit.
Time. Yeah. Oh man, that's so funny. But it looks like you're not in stage 3 for sure. So what we're seeing on the front page is the core, and they show it in a slightly different, you know, the shifting the way they do it compared to the one that we're used to. But it looks like you're definitely in the higher end of it. So it's almost like you shifted from a stage 3 to a stage 1. So, you know, overproduction of cortisol. Are you having difficulty with sleeping or staying asleep in those early morning hours?
Yeah, staying asleep. I tend to, if I'm woken or if I wake up, then I'm suddenly wide awake and I can't get back to sleep.
Yeah. And you can see that here where my cursor is right here, where the eye, you see that you're really high there. You're high normal, you know, at the wake up time, and then you drop down, but you stay right at that, you follow the curve almost, but at bedtime even, you're right at the high normal range. So it might be causing some disruptions in your sleep. So I would be looking at the, what's going on with your stress levels and how do you manage that, and maybe even looking at some phosphatidylserine or magnolia bark to try to calm that down, I would be looking at, are you doing any caffeine, which could interfere? I'd cut out the caffeine. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. But definitely phosphatidylserine could be helpful, and I would probably do it at bedtime. And then when you first, you could probably do it anytime really, but I would say bedtime, and then if you wake up in the middle of the night or close to morning, take another dose. And then you could take another dose first thing in the morning when you get up. And then don't take it throughout
and
the day.
Is that just
then.
Yeah,
I would start with that. It's usually 100 milligrams. The studies have shown that you might need up to 800 milligrams. That's usually for repairing hippocampal damage. It's very expensive to do it that way. You can also do it in a cream form. The company Apex Energetics, I don't know if you guys can get it over there, but they have a cream form that also has some other herbs in it that are calming and relaxing, you know, lemon balm and things like that. And that's much more cost-effective to do. And then you can also get it in a powdered form. There are companies that make the phosphatidylserine from sunflower, so you don't have to worry about it being from GMO soy. Most of it does come from soy, because the phosphatidylserine comes from soy. So you'd be want to be careful about where you're sourcing it and make sure that it's if it is soy, it's organic soy, that sort of thing, or that it's a company that makes it from the sunflower.
Okay, great.
Okay, yeah, so that's that with the adrenals. And then if you go into our adrenal program on the site, I know you're brand new in there, but if you go into the one on the main site, there's a whole bunch of stuff on how to read these tests and how to interpret them. And I don't know how much experience you've had in the past, but lots of information. You can read the list of the herbs and things and see what resonates for you. You also want to be supporting with vitamin C and B5 and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And let me look at your unmetabolized versus metabolized. So there's your free. Yeah, your 24-hour free cortisol is super high. But the good thing is your DHEA is good.
Okay.
Yeah, and your metabolized cortisol is low. So, you know, here's where the difference is. And the Dutch, the people that do the Dutch, always talk about how you can get misleading results on your saliva tests, and that they don't distinguish between metabolized and unmetabolized and free cortisol, and they're doing both. So you're on the low end of the metabolized cortisol, so the downstream metabolites are low, and the free cortisol is high. I think they might give us a little chart in the back. I know that Meridian Valley does. Let's see if there was a... Oh, I wonder if I can turn this. Rotate, which way do I want to go? Counterclockwise? No. Rotate clockwise. What? Okay. What? Why does it keep doing that? It won't go okay, maybe it is going straight. Maybe that's it. I just have to shrink it. Let me try that. Probably. No, why won't it go to the... It's very strange, isn't it? It won't...
Yeah, maybe it was...
Right, wait,
maybe
let me see. Maybe I have to go to a... Here we go. I got it. It's upside down, so now I can get it to turn. Okay, so I just have to go clockwise again and then clockwise again. There we go. It kept flipping the page to a different page, that's why. Okay, so here's our pretty little picture. And I love, this is a great way to learn, by the way. When you do these tests, you start looking things up on the chart. So if we look at cortisol, it was the TH, which one was it that was, let me go to the first page again. See if I can read it on its side. Oh, okay. Yeah, so if you look there, it says that the metabolized cortisol is THF and THE, it tells it here. THF and THE. Okay, so here. So the cortisol metabolizes the THF and the cortisone. Cortisone is an inactive storage form of cortisol, and that's the THE. Those are low. So it means that one or the other, this is the 5-alpha reductase possibly, and you may need, usually people need 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. How's your blood sugar?
Well, I bought a blood sugar meter and it seemed to say, but it was a European one, so I was converting the numbers and it seemed to say that my blood sugar was high. So I've been trying to follow, you know, three meals a day, no snacks, you know, 3 to 4 right. hours before bedtime, no eating, et cetera, et cetera. But then I thought, well, I'll get the meter that you have on your site so that I don't have to convert all the time. And according to that, my blood sugar's fine. So I don't know which is right. But I did then have some blood tests done recently for the hemoglobin A1C, which was 5. And all the other markers, I mean, they're in, I was trying to find, trying to convert them to the state version, but I wasn't quite sure. I had your chart up from the insulin resistance module, but I wasn't sure what units they were.
Mm-hmm. What unit?
But they seem to be okay.
Hemoglobin A1C is a percentage. So
yeah.
It's always going to be the same from one to the next. That won't change. So if it was a 5, it was a 5.
But I didn't have any. The antibodies were all fine, or the insulin and the islets of Langerhorn.
Okay, good. Did you test your insulin itself?
Yes.
Like to do a fasting insulin, and it was how much?
It was fasting. Yeah, it was, according to that, it was slightly below the normal range.
Okay, yeah, it's better below than above. I mean, unless you see somebody in a type 1 diabetes, and then, you know, then it's problematic. So what I was looking for, just to show you my thought process, is if you have good levels of the free cortisol, right, but you have low levels of these metabolites, then it says that this pathway is thwarted right here, right? This pathway for conversion from the active to the inactive, or the downstream metabolites. And so I'm like, okay, what causes that? Well, this is 5-alpha reductase and this is 5-beta reductase. So we often see increases in 5-alpha reductase, and which means that you have less active cortisol and more in the metabolites. But in your case, I was looking at, well, it's really a decrease in 5-alpha reductase, so we'd want to increase that activity. So how do you increase it? Oh, low insulin. It could be. Well, wait a minute. These are saying, how do you increase it? Yeah. Yeah. So maybe there's an issue with low insulin. So it was a good thing to do those antibodies. You know what I would do too? I would do, Stephanie, I would do, if you can do a postprandial insulin. So if you can go into the lab about 45 minutes after you have a meal and make it a relatively high carbohydrate, whatever the highest carbohydrate meal you usually eat, if that's fruit or if it's quinoa or lentils or whatever the highest carbohydrate meal you normally would eat, eat that and
I
then
don't
45
really at
minutes.
The moment, but,
you don't
yeah.
do any.
So,
yeah, I don't.
No, well, just because I thought I had an issue with the blood sugar, I sort of cut everything out. But, you know, I don't even have blueberries or anything like that. But.
Well, then have some blueberries, you know, have a meal that's whatever you normally have for breakfast and then have some blueberries with it and then see where it goes and see if it raises it all.
Yeah.
Blueberries probably not a good one to test it for just because. So what I'm trying to do is see if your body has the ability to make insulin. So you might want to just splurge and have some mango and go test it or have some sweet potato or something like that or quinoa or whatever. But something that normally would raise up the level of insulin, just to make sure that you're responding. We don't want to see it go like to 30, but I'd want to see it go above 2. And if you're saying you were down low, you were probably at 2 or 3, which is actually good target for fasting.
Yeah, it was just below their. I mean, obviously their ranges are different, and this is a different. It's PMOL per liter per L. It was 17, and their range is 18 to 173. So
okay, so we're going to do a quick. I'm going to show you how you can do a quick conversion of it. If you go out to our site, and you go to, and this is only available to NEPT people. Sorry, guys, who are in another program, but you can join us in NEPT.
It's the master.
If you go to the Master Health Tracker.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
I did do that.
And what did it come out to be in U.S.?
I can't remember. I did it the other day, but I didn't save it.
Okay. I'm just going to open one that I already have. Open it. I'll go look and see. Because I like to see it around 3.
Okay.
Just showing. Let me just go here and show it. And share the screen. Okay, you should be able to see it now, right? We're going to go to Lab Results International. Yes, you already did this. But we'll see what it works out to be. Because sometimes the lab ranges here even say like 5 to 10 or 5 to 30 or some ridiculous things like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's silly, but that's the way they go. Okay, thyroid, CBC, insulin. Okay, let's go there. And you said yours was 17?
Yeah.
2.4. So it is on the low side. I mean, I like to see it around 3 below that. So there might be that you aren't producing enough insulin. Do you have any type 1 diabetes in your family?
No.
Okay. And so you did the insulin antibodies, you did the islet cell antibodies, did you also do the, what's the other one?
C-peptide. Yes, I did that.
That was okay.
0.96, which is a sort of thing that sort of looks like a U, G per L.
But what did it say in terms of its range? What did it say in terms of its range?
It doesn't give a range. Oh, no, actually, there's a range underneath. The range was 0.8 to 4.2, and I was 0.96, so... Low end of range.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. And then what about GAD antibodies? Do they do that? Or did you do that?
Yeah. I guess. And that was, less than 1 of sort of the normal.
Okay. So there's really probably not an autoimmune situation here. But I would love to know, is there something going on with your pancreas that it's not producing enough insulin? So the way I would check it out, I'm just going down that path just because it's really rare to see somebody with an excessive 5-alpha reductase. Usually we have a deficiency of 5-alpha reductase.
Yeah. I don't know if it's related in any way, but in terms of pancreatic output in previous stool test that's come up as low chymotrypsin.
Low. Mm-hmm. What about elastase on your
short test?
We'll look that one up too, because that's another pancreatic function indicator. So yeah, so I would, that's the way I would look at that. So we can go on and look at the rest of this, but that's what I would do for that piece, just to see. Because it may be that you're not, that this is the same as what you had before. It's just that the other test only was testing for, wasn't looking at the other pieces of it. So, how do I get back to where I was? Here it is. So many windows that I'm trying to figure out where I was. Okay, it was a PDF, right? Did I hit open?
Yeah.
All right. Let me see if I can find it again. Every time I move around, I lose my window where I had stuff. I thought it was in here. Let me see. Huh. That is so weird. I lost it. All right. I'll open it. It was here. That's why I'm confused. It was in here, and then I opened it as a PDF, but I don't know where the PDF went. We'll just go back to the one. Can you see it now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Actually, it's better because it's bigger. Okay, so that's it with the cortisol. Let's look at the progesterone, perimenopausal range. Or postmenopausal range. And how old are you? You're
36.
Okay. So you're definitely premenopausal or, just menstruating. So here's your range. You are, your estrogens are low. No, wait, I'm sorry. Your estrogens are low. Yep. Your progesterone is low and your testosterone is high, which is a PCOS kind of a presentation.
Age 18. Well, I was told I had polycystic ovaries, but I haven't sort of had anything tested recently, and I don't take anything for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the best way to do it is to control your glucose. Things like, you might want to take some Vitex to help with the progesterone. If you're going to supplement any kind of hormone, I always like to supplement as far back as possible to let the body do it. I definitely don't like putting anybody on estrogen unless, it's perimenopausal and very, very low and there's a real issue. It's not super low, but I would definitely want to get that progesterone up because it is even lower than the ratio-wise, it's lower than the estrogen. We can look at your metabolites. That's the other thing that's really important with estrogen, and that was on the next page. So we have there's the progesterone. The DHEA, the testosterone's high. The DHEA is in a normal range, which means it's – and, again, it's the opposite of what we normally see. Called aromatase inhibitors, where the testosterone is being overconverted to estrogen. And we see that a lot in men. We're not seeing that in you. We're seeing the opposite. So there's a lot of literature on aromatase inhibitors. There's not a lot of literature on aromatase enhancers. So that's something to start to look into. And it's something I want to look into as well. So look for something that's going to increase the aromatase. But let's look at where these guys are going. So this confirms, again, the 5-alpha reductase. Is low. Let me see. So the eicosanoline. Let's see. Five beta, 5-alpha. And so increase in 5-beta activity, which we normally see increase in 5-alpha. So write that down to look into what do you do to inhibit 5-beta reductase, not 5-alpha.
Okay.
5-alpha makes androgens more androgenic, more notably 5-BHG, 5-alpha. Okay, and then let's look at your estrogen metabolites. They're pretty equally low across the board. You see we have estrone, estradiol, and estriol. The estriol seems to be a little bit lower than the other two. So I like to look at the ratio. I don't know if they actually do the ratio on this test, but your ratio is definitely.
Chart,
do they do the estrogen quotient? Do they tell you what it is, or we have to do it? So the estrogen quotient is generally the estriol divided by estrone and estradiol. And yours is definitely, so yours is 3 divided by 8, so yours is around a 3.
Okay.
And that's not good. So iodine deficiency might be involved here. So you might want to look into an iodine load test to see if that's the case. And then there's a really good chart in one of the very early modules in NEPT. It's either the first or the second video in the first module that has this estrogen picture. That shows all the ways that the different nutrients that affect the conversion from E1, E2, E3 into the downstream metabolites. And that can help you to manipulate that. But iodine's big.
Yeah.
Iodine's big. Right. And you definitely have to work with
I
the iodine.
I do take, I have the activation product. I can't remember what it's called. He's got it in a dropper. The seaweed stuff.
Okay.
But I don't know
well,
whether
you want
that,
to see
and it's not iodine as such. But,
right.
Yeah.
So go ahead and just – and Hakala Lab, even though they're in Colorado or someplace out west for us, they ship all over the world, and they're the easiest lab to work with that because they'll just ship it to you with the little iodine tablet that so it's consistent. You're just taking this 50-milligram thing and get the bromine and the fluoride with it. Because you want to see if you've got some bromine or fluoride toxicity. I haven't seen much in the fluoride, but I see a lot of bromine toxicity. And the cells are being, the iodine receptors are being just kind of, you know, shoved out and the bromine's taken over. Because if you look at this, like your 16 is good, your 4 is higher, so that's not good. 4 is the most carcinogenic one. Where's your 2? Your 2-methoxy is good. Your 2-hydroxy is good. And so that, you know, just shows that the methylation is actually happening. I don't suspect a methylation issue because your hydroxy is being converted to methoxy quite healthily. But there is a little bit too much on the 4-hydroxy. And there's a chart, like I said, in that module that shows you the things that get in the way. It could be magnesium deficiency, definitely iodine deficiency. And I would look at your cruciferous vegetables and DIM or broccoli sprout powder, those sorts of things to help you there.
Okay.
Okay?
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Does this help? Yeah, it smacks of PCOS. But let's just see and let's look up those what we can do to stimulate the 5-alpha reductase and stimulate the aromatase, which is really weird because we're always talking about inhibiting those. So what do we do to stimulate those? And then the insulin, okay, interesting case. I would love to see you get some of those tests done and then report back.
Okay. I will. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Okay, thanks for your time.
I'm sure. Okay, so let me bye-bye. I am going to go to back to our screen and see who else has hand up. Which one is Allison? She may have some insights or she might have questions. And then I want to see what's been posted in the chat, the Join Me chat, to see if there's anything of, let's see, note there. And, yeah, Allison knows a lot about PCOS, so she might have. Oh, Allison, turn your volume down because I'm reflecting back. All right. Let me see what we have. Oh, some of this is still from yesterday, so let's see. What did Allison say? So those are all for, so yeah, so Laura's in there. She should read them. Tony said, fascinating. Interesting, comparing 70s to mine, so different. Yes, we're all unique. Yes. Okay, so let me open up your line. And I'm just going to let you speak, and I'm going to be quiet. And then once I speak, you can turn your mic off. Allison, you can go ahead and speak. I'm going to open up your line. I'm going to let you ask your question, and then I'm going to close. I'm going to have you close your line when I speak, or your mic when I speak, or I'll mute you when I speak. That way we can control it and we can both talk. Okay, so 1, 2, 3, you're open.
Hello, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
You can. Oh, great. So my question was, would it be possible for you to look through my Dutch test that came through on Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an interesting comparison, and I think it'd be good for all of us to learn by looking at two different ones at the same time, or sort of similar times.
Absolutely.
Before we have time to forget.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and I'm not echoing too badly anymore. Okay, so let me go ahead and open up yours. And yours came in on Tuesday, so I think I can find yours in the folder as well. I think yours was already on my computer folder. Dutch, did you upload it?
Yes, I uploaded it and sent it to you on on a Skype as well. So I did upload it using the file uploader.
Good, you got it on Skype. Let me look there. Let's see, Skype. I'm going to whisper so I don't hear myself. I still hear myself. Okay.
Yay.
I'm going. You can see it?
Yep.
All right. So mute your line. I can't do both. Okay, I got it. Lynn, if you could watch it when I ask you to open her line up again, that would be great. But right now I want to keep it closed. Otherwise, I'm going to just hear myself echo. It's going to drive me nuts. Okay, so this is, very different. So Allison, looking at her cortisols, look at her red line, she's way down there. So she's definitely in a, you know, I would say probably a stage 2 or a stage 3. And we usually use the DHEA to differentiate between those. I'm a little off in my way of differentiating between the stages here because I'm used to looking at the biohealth, which is saliva, and we have certain ranges for the totals. So without looking at that, I'm just eyeballing it. She's up at the high end of normal, right at the, you know, probably early awakening. So she might be having trouble. And you can just type it into the chat there, Allison, if you're having difficulty with like early morning awakening, like waking up before you really need to and then having trouble going back to sleep, because I would expect that might be a problem there. Let's see. Yes, you bet. Always wake up. Yeah. Okay, so that's it. So her cortisol is going up. She's off. It's basically off pattern. Now, if we were to see this throughout the night, so this just goes to midnight and then when she wakes up, but you can see that she's high at bedtime, which I know Allison has bad sleep habits of staying up late, and it's not necessarily that you're not disciplined, Allison. It's that your body is getting wired again. So you're exhausted throughout the day. Your first, it's really hard in the morning to get going. And then you get really, probably get a second wind late in the afternoon and you're finally starting to feel productive. And then it's bedtime and you're frustrated and you go to bed, but your cortisol doesn't settle down and go to like, you know, one or tiny during the thing. So I used to be a lark, not an owl. So, you know, one of the things that might help you to shift that pattern is a 3-day sleep vacation. We've talked about that before, but I'm going to throw out something that might be a little controversial, but for those of us night owls, it actually sometimes comes as a relief. And I reset myself a lot this way, is that you actually don't go to bed one night. and then you go to bed super early the next night because you can't stay awake. But you have, the problem is you have to resist the urge to fall asleep at 3 in the afternoon. So that's one thing that you can do it. Okay. So you basically would get up. I would do it on a weekend. I wouldn't do it when you have to go to work. So you wake up on Saturday. You sleep in as much as you can on a Saturday morning. You get up. And then you just don't go to bed Saturday night. You find some good movies. You clean out your desk. You do all those things that you've been wanting to do. And then somewhere in the evening on Sunday, you know, around about 7, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, you go to bed. And because you're so tired from having been up for 36 hours, you will generally be able to sleep as long as you need to and get up. And that sometimes helps to reset that pattern. Sometimes you need to do that, you know, 2 or 3 times, a couple of weeks in a row to reset it. But the better way to do it, if you can, is that whole concept of the 3-day sleep vacation where you just go to bed and you, you know, maybe take a Friday off and you start your day with nice, you know, reading and catching up with books and videos and that sort of thing. And you lounge about and you make sure you stay in bed 12 hours a night. So one of those two could be helpful. Okay, 2 days. Good. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Viewer 27 says, yeah, like jet lag. Yeah, and it does work. It does work. Not everybody can do it, right? There are some people who just can't do it. They do that and they fall asleep at 2 in the afternoon the next day. I personally can do it. I can keep going, but I do find myself extremely sleepy somewhere around like 6 or 7 in the evening on that second day. Okay, good. All right, so that's that. If we look at her free cortisol, see her free cortisol is super low and her metabolites are a little bit better. You know, not much, but they're in the normal range. All right, DHEA looks good at this point. But let's look at your estrogen, progesterone, et cetera. So your estrogens are super high. This is the complete opposite, isn't it? Your progesterone's super low and your testosterone's perfect. So we would be looking at what do we do to support this. I'd be looking at, well, you want to support your adrenals. If you want to support it from a standpoint of not getting into specific bioidenticals, you certainly don't need estrogen. You'd want to be doing progesterone or pregnenolone. So you could start by being a little bit more conservative and go with pregnenolone. But with this variation here, it wouldn't hurt to do some progesterone cream or whatever, and it shouldn't be hard for you to get that prescribed for you or prescribe it for yourself. I don't know if they let you do that over there. So that's the kind of things I would be looking at. But then it's like, why is your estrogen so high? Why is your body making so much estrogen? And we also want to see, is this estrogen in the dangerous metabolites or is it in the not so dangerous metabolites? So, yeah, so why is that? And we can tell by the look and whether it's iodine and whether it's some of the other nutrients. So, yeah, so your estrogen quotient is enormous. Okay, because if we look at it, right, here's your estrone. It's way up off the charts. Your estradiol is way up off the charts, and your estriol is at the low normal. Estriol is the protective one. Estrone and estradiol are estrone is definitely the one that's more carcinogenic proliferative. So you want to get that ratio down. So like I said with Stephanie, there's the commonality that you have is that your estrogen quotient is too high, and you want to make sure that you do something about that. It could be iodine, and I would, for you again, I would pull up that chart. And because that chart has come up twice, I'm going to show everybody what that chart looks like because it can be kind of interesting to look at. We're going to go to modules. Get rid of this. Are you guys still seeing my screen? Am I showing my whole screen or am I showing just, I think I'm showing my whole screen. I think I still am. Nutritional endocrinology, and it would be in the overview. And I believe it's in the second core content video, the intricate web of, it's either the second or the third. We'll look. There's this really beautiful chart, and I'm just going to go to the videos. Not the videos, the slides. I like to look at I'll look at the printer friendly because I can find them more easily. Let's see if it's in here or it's in the next one. Here we go. It's this one. All right. So it's slide, oh, it's on the 8-9 page. Okay, I'm going to go back to the previous, and we'll open up the big ones now that I know it's there. And I know where to find it. Sort back. There we go. Okay, so you can see this estrogen metabolism. Just type in the chat that you can see it. Yes. So you can see this estrogen chart? Yes? Yes. Okay, good. Okay, so we have estrone, androstenedione to estrone. I gotta look back at this. Remind me to go back to Stephanie's for a bit because I wanna see what her androstenedione was. Okay. Because it may be something in this conversion here that's not happening. So we have estrone, estradiol, and estriol, right? Estriol is protective, but it has to go through this dangerous 16-hydroxy to get to estriol. And a lot of times what we have is this low estriol because we have a high 16, and we don't want to sit there. So the iodine is super important for that conversion from the 16 down to the estriol. So check your iodine for sure, Allison. And, you know, you've just recently discovered a high TSH. And so the reason you might not be making enough thyroid hormone is you might be very deficient in iodine. So I'd sure be looking there. The other things that interfere with the conversion down from estrone down into estriol is you know obesity, but you do have the problem with the thyroid. So addressing the thyroid should be helpful with that. Exposure to pesticides, so really being careful about your organics. And then cimetidine, right? That's like a proton pump inhibitor, isn't it? It's an acid blocker. So I don't think you're on any of that, but pesticides, making sure you're going organic and working on your thyroid and getting that iodine here. To get more of the protective, and let's look at Allison's, where did it go? Oh, lordy, lordy. It's so hard to find this once I flip away. Okay. So if we look at Allison's, we'll just flip back and forth between them. So she's low in the estriol. We looked at some of those reasons. We want to look at what these metabolites are. The 16 isn't bad. So actually that problem is happening a little bit before that. So the 16 is okay, but the 4, which is the highly carcinogenic one, is very high. And Allison, as I recall, you had some of those CYPs and COMTs in your genetics, if I'm not mistaken, which makes that is probably why. So you're going to need to like stay off of the caffeine and go gluten free and be super, super careful with your diet to disable the activity of that conversion into the 4-methoxy. Cruciferous vegetables, DIM. DIM could be very helpful. DIM or I3C, indole-3-carbinol, or broccoli sprout extract powder, more cruciferous vegetables. But you want more of those factors, that DIM and I3C, that helps you to go away from making that 4-hydroxy. If we look down at your 2-hydroxy is actually quite high, which is the more protective one. So you've got high in both the 4 and the 2, which is interesting. And your methylation seems to be working okay. You're in a normal range because your methoxy and your hydroxy are in decent ranges. So there's something that's preventing these from going down that pathway towards estriol. So we're going to go back to that picture and see if we can figure this out. And there's also a picture in the back of their thing, so we can go back to that picture as well. So it's this is being thwarted. This pathway is being thwarted. We're going down. So, and then magnesium. So magnesium is a good one to be looking at to help you to not be going down this way. So when you're low in magnesium, it makes you make more of the 4-hydroxy. Okay. So you're doing okay coming down to the 2-hydroxy. And this is where the estrogen quotient is E3 over E1 plus E2. So if anybody wants to calculate that for Allison and pop it in the chat, that would be great to know. Progesterone, fatty acids. So you want to look at your fatty acids, exercise, so I3C. So any of these things that we talked about and any of the things listed here could be helpful here It's an interesting pattern because I was expecting to see the 2-hydroxy being low as well. So it's very specifically pushing this 4-hydroxy pathway. Let's look at it again. Pushing the 4-hydroxy pathway. Well, really focus on your magnesium. And I'm sure there's some other things as well that we could find. Let's look at their chart and see if they have anything more to say. I may have to see if I can flip this chart again. There it is. I don't want to look at it on my side. So let me see if I go like that. No, I don't have it open in the... Yeah, I can't do it until I save it. So I still have, let's see if I still have yours open. Let me go back. I'm going to go back and open Stephanie's again and see if I can get hers on its side. And then we'll have all three of these pages at once. So we'll have the chart. So if I do... Why did it let me flip it before, but it's not letting me flip it now? Oh, I know, because it was open in Dropbox. Dropbox helped me. Let me do that. Okay, so let me do the flipping. Lordy, lordy, I'm having trouble with this. Anyway, I'm going to look at it on my side. We'll see what we can do here, because this is driving me nuts. All right, so Allison's is here. Let's see. So if we're looking at androstenedione, yeah, I bet it's the COMT. So look down here on this chart, and maybe hard to see, but you see the 4-OH supposed to get converted to 4-methoxy, and it's the COMT enzyme. So yours was low. I can't remember, Allison, whether yours was heterozygous or homozygous. Yeah, yours is 0.1. Oof. It should be greater than 1. Yours is homo. Okay, so this is why. All right. So... have to increase the activity of that COMT, the DIM and the I3C. I wouldn't even mess. I would do more cruciferous. I would do more of the other. But right now, because of the situation that you're in, I would be doing some DIM and I3C to help that. Let's see. I'm going to print this if I can. So I can and what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna take this and we'll put it in on our site, this chart that they have. We'll put it on the site somewhere. All right, it's not liking to print it. All right. So where's our androstenedione? Let me go down to page. Page is this? It's page 6. All right. Yeah. So I just want this to be a really good indication of you're not going to know all of this stuff. But when you learn how to read these biochemical pathways, you can start to figure out your metabolites. And this is the piece that Western medicine tends to miss. They just say, oh, you're low in this, you're high in that. They don't look at the metabolites. They just give you prescriptions, right? Allison, you know, as being in Western medicine for the last 18 years. And this is a much different approach. So I'm going to study this a little bit more. But for now, my recommendations are check your iodine. Start doing some more seaweed in the meantime, once you've gotten the test done. I want to see where you're at. And then go ahead and do some more of the broccoli, the cauliflower, and all that kind of stuff. But get yourself some of the get yourself some DIM and I3C or both. I think DIM works, tends to work better. I don't know which. I think that even, I don't know if Jamie's on the call today, but he said on the last call that he's had really good results with getting the, decreasing the 4-hydroxy doing the DIM. And lowering the estrogens as well. This is cool. I haven't looked at this one. They just recently updated this chart, and now they have they have all the genetics on it too. Yeah, let's do a whole class on the Dutch, and then we'll get there. But you've got some starting points. Let me open up your line and see if we can, if you have questions, or type in your questions. I hate it when somebody's line isn't open.
Hello, thank you.
You're welcome.
That was, really interesting. And actually, I thought it was interesting when you were going through Stephanie's, the comparison.
Yeah.
Because they're so different. I mean, hers are, with the estrogen metabolites, hers are super low and mine are super high.
Yep. I would say print off this chart and have it handy when you're working with people and looking at theirs and study it. Just, and any time you can look at it and study it, the more it starts to become second nature.
Yeah.
That's why some of these pathways I just know in my head because I've studied them so much and I've done them so much, but this is going to be helpful. And just really try to understand what's going on in your body by going through this. And I'm going to go through it too. They really made this chart amazing because before it didn't have all the, I don't remember it having all of the SNPs in there as well. And you can go ahead. And what I would do with a red highlighter and a yellow highlighter is just mark up on here which areas you have the SNPs.
Yeah.
And that'll help you to see, and it'll probably make sense. You'll see the backups in these pathways.
Yeah, yeah. And they emailed me a PDF of the chart alone as well. So I've got that printed off and I have it with me in clinic.
Oh,
so
great.
Very good. I'll laminate it.
Do you remember what your 3A4 was? Your CYP3A4?
No.
Because that's the one that goes down to the 16-hydroxy and then the estriol. So
okay.
Look that one up. And it takes the estradiol down to the estriol. So that's probably, I bet that's, it's going to be at least heterozygous, if not homozygous.
Okay.
Yeah, mark it up. This is a great way to learn, guys, is you get the pathways, and then when you get the results back, you just take your markers and you start to mark where people are, like where their deficiencies might be. But especially when you have the SNPs here, you can mark where the SNPs are. For those of you who don't know what SNPs are because you're in, like, insulin resistance and going, we're not studying that, there are SNPs related to insulin resistance and SNPs related to it. It's single nucleotide polymorphisms, and it's another word, you know, the layperson's term would be genetic defects or genetic mutations. They're actually technically called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. And when you have these SNPs, if you, like Allison has this COMT, catecholamine O-methyl transferase, it's the gene that codes for that enzyme. And that enzyme is what helps her to break down these metabolites and neutralize them for support. And the reason she's got this COMT is homozygous, meaning she got a defective gene from mom and dad. So the functioning of her COMT enzyme is down to like 30% of normal, you know, down by 70%, which means that that's why she's not doing this conversion and getting rid of this 4-hydroxy. So anything she can do to increase the activity of that enzyme and the cruciferous, the sulforaphanes, the DIM and I3C can be helpful there. Okay? And typically with something like this, I would go all out with it. I would find out about the iodine just because, especially you've just gotten this hypothyroid diagnosis, and then do this really intensely for 3 to 4 months and do this test again.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And as practitioners, the cool part with the Dutch test, if you are a practitioner that, and they have done it with nutritionists as well as licensed practitioners, when you open the account, they'll let you buy up to 5 of their tests at like $125 each. So I would highly recommend that you make that investment and buy those tests and have them on hand for redoing your own, but also, you know, for selling them to clients if you want to. Super. Whew. I'm sure that opened up a lot of questions. CYP1B2 are heterozygous. Okay. Oh, so yours is 3 at a time. Okay. And the 2D6 is homozygous. Yeah. which COMT would apply to it. I don't know that there's a particular of those. All of those genes will code for it, and if you have multiple genes that are impaired, then it's going to increase the likelihood of having a problem. So I don't know that there's a particular one. That might be a question to pose to the company and see if they've been able to associate it. Good. And I haven't done, somebody asked, has anybody done the 24-hour from Meridian? I haven't. They just came out with it last week. So it's something that I would like to do. I'd like to actually, the way I want to do it is to, I have a kit for Dutch. I want to, for the Precision Analytics Dutch, and I want to actually do it on the same day. I'd really like to do it on the same day and see how they compare to see. Okay. Anybody else have any questions or comments or anything at all? This stuff's fascinating. Did you have any more questions about yours, Stephanie, after seeing Allison's, or it's just something for us to study? This is a great chart. I can't wait to sit down and study it. I'm going to make it bigger and laminate it, too. All right. Any other questions? Any questions about anything? Who's got a question about blood sugar, insulin resistance, digestion? Your 25 has joined. Anybody? Carol? Sequoia? Tony? Valerie? If I'm not saying your name, it's because it's very, it's just saying cell phone or whatever. It's not giving me your name. Dika? Valerie. Okay. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. I just have a quick question about the slippery elm tea with the DL powder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying it myself. I read a lot of different things. Most say to do it after a meal. I think you said to do it before.
Depends on what the symptoms are, right? Before and after if it's severe. So my theory with doing it before is that if somebody gets heartburn, like they eat and they get heartburn immediately or they get that indigestion feeling right away, that I want to give their lining, their mucous membrane, some protection and some coating from that. And some healing.
That
makes sense. Yeah, and then after, like if somebody tends to get it after, like they tend to be fine during their meal and then a little bit after their meal, like 15, 20 minutes, half hour later they get it, then you can certainly experiment with doing it at the end. But because we're all unique and because everybody's a little bit different in their presentation, you just play with it and see. So see how you feel with it. I mean, you may not have symptoms, so it may not be easy to tell. But you play with it and you have them figure out what the best timing is for them. And some people, if it's real severe, like if they've been on meds for reflux for many years and they probably have a lot of esophageal erosion, what I want to do and the reason for doing it before is to actually protect that esophagus, that delicate tissue in the esophagus from any acids in the food that they're about to eat. And that slippery elm does help to do that.
Okay, that makes total sense. Now, mm-hmm. On the quantities, I think you've said a teaspoon, but I've also read in other places a tablespoon of slippery elm. How do you know how much to use?
The growth factor. Typically, it's however much it takes to thicken up whatever quantity of water you're doing. So if you're using, like sometimes I'll do it where I'll make a tea, like a licorice tea or, gynostemma tea or whatever, Tulsi tea. And then I'll make the tea and then I put the slippery elm in. If I put a teaspoon in and I stir it and it's not really thickening, then I'll put more. So you want to get it so that what you end up with is not a brick and it's not thin. You want it to be a nice, thick, gooey kind of consistency.
Oh, okay.
And it depends on whether you use hot water or cold water and how long you let it sit. You really should let it sit for about 5 minutes before you do it to activate it.
And what if you add DGL to it? How much do you add of the powder?
DGL powder, and again, it's a matter of working with the dose. I typically, a teaspoon might be a lot, but I typically do a teaspoon. People might be able to get away with it. And again, if somebody's in an active acute situation, you're just telling them, look, this isn't like take this pill and call me in the morning. This is like we're going to experiment. We're just going to keep changing it up. You want the least – I always look for the least effective dose, so the smallest dose that can have an effect as opposed to overdoing it. And so you either start with a higher dose and back down, or you start with a lower dose and go up. I usually make that decision based on a case-by-case basis because some people are super sensitive. So if they start with a high dose, they're going to feel sick. If some people are like, you know, brick iron, you know, it takes a lot to get them to have an effect. Then I go, I had one person who, she actually got up to, I mean, she was taking so much licorice, not DGL, but licorice to try to get her adrenals up to get that feeling, and she didn't get her cortisol levels up until she was on huge doses. I've had other people who take one or two drops of a licorice extract and it raises their cortisols. So it's just working with each person individually. And if they tell you, oh, I'm so sensitive every time I try this stuff, you're going to start with tiny doses. You'll say, okay, we're going to just start building your dose up. Start with this. Okay, how'd that go? Well, it didn't help the – I did have a bad reaction, but it didn't help the heartburn. Okay, let's move it up. Well, I didn't have a bad reaction, but it didn't help the heartburn. And then they get up to a higher dose. They go, oh, yeah, that helped a little bit. Oh, you have them go a little bit more. Yeah, that helped a little bit more. They may get to a point where they went, well, it helped the heartburn a little bit more, but then I got a headache and I had to back off. So you find that dose. And then there's the people who are the brick oven. You know, I take six Tylenol before I can touch my headache. Well, okay, those are the people that you can just start with the full dose.
Okay, thank you. That helps a lot.
You're welcome. Yeah, and it all comes from experience, too. The more you do it, the more you get a feel for it. Yeah.
Thanks.
Great. You're welcome. And, okay, I don't know who you are. Whatcom County, Washington? Well, you have your hand up. Who is it?
Hi, I'm Steph.
Oh, Steph.
I got a new phone. Yeah. Yeah, I got an American phone with free roaming in Canada. It's like $1,000 cheaper.
Oh my goodness gracious, what a great idea.
I know. But yeah, so I have a question and I've had it for a while and I've just been hesitating to raise it, but I've decided that since like we're doing all these hormone tests today, it's totally a weird question.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay. Now that she's framed me up for this. Okay.
It's just a what's your opinion question, I think. So I've always had, like, my taps have always come back weird. Every single time, weird. Like, once or twice. Like, so it'll come back weird. I go back in and take it again. It comes back weird.
Back
yeah. No, it won't come back normal until, like, the third time. Every time.
Okay.
So it's obviously my favorite thing to go and do that. So
how often do you do
so
them?
Often. So the last one I did was, like, in my early 20s. I used to do them once a year. And then I was just like, you know what? This is, like, never normal, and I just am not digging it, so I haven't gone back. But so there's that. Okay. Mm. And then I did the Meridian Valley, the 24-hour hormone, the urine, not the dried one, the old one, which I love that test. But it came back, you know, the theme was just all the hormones were plumb low, and some of the methylated hormones were the metabolites were, like, really low. And then I tried to do the 23andMe, and I tried, like, three samples, and then we had that weird thing where they had to, like, I had to sign that contract where I'd never send in my test again. They were like, we can't do your test. You don't have enough, you know, genetic material.
Wow.
Yeah, so that happened. And I'm just, so I could not do the 23andMe, and blah, blah, blah. But I'm thinking, like, is this all methylation? Can I just assume I've got, you
I'm
going to
assume if you're methylated, yeah, I would assume it just based on what you just told me. Yeah, I would assume there's some methylation. Now, because you haven't done the test, you don't know if you also have the Capcom cheese. And you might be able to actually, in looking at the Dutch or looking at using this sheet with your other tests, because it has the genes superimposed on it with the pathways, to look at your test from Meridian, like, you know, your 4-hydroxys and your 2-hydroxys and all that, but with this particular Dutch steroid pathway. And I'm going to download it and I'll pop it up and I'll get it out to everybody.
That would be cool. Methylation issues cause weird PAPs? Like, can weird PAPs be a result of methylation issues?
Sure. I mean, yeah, methylation issues can cause everything, right? Because it's DNA repair. right? Mm-hmm. So DNA repair, DNA synthesis, you know, so it can cause issues anywhere, absolutely. You know,
and
the experience. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say it could potentially also cause weird genetic material in my saliva, like just not readable by 23andMe kind of
that
thing.
That I don't know.
Over and over
that's
again.
That's a first. I haven't done any research. You may look and see if Amy Asco has anything to say about that. But her test that she does a swab. This is saliva. So
swab
you might have FUG. Oh, I wonder if it has anything to do with that. Now I just made a connection and I don't know if this is valid. This is like theories in the making.
Total speculation.
FUG2, right, is when you don't secrete your markers into your. So I wonder if there's any correlation. You may do some research on between an FUG2 and the issues of not having enough of the genetic material in your saliva because you're not secreting, say, some of your other markers besides just the blood types into there.
Right, and if I'm not secreting it into my mucosa body-wide, then perhaps that would have something to do with saliva too.
Yes, exactly. So that's an issue.
Okay.
And then that would explain, if you have FPUG2s, that would explain a lot of the gut stuff that you've had, you know, issues with, that you spend so much time learning about. I have like 6 homozygous FUG2s. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
And I had an abnormal pap smear, when I was in my 20s, and this was before I got fully integrated into this whole alternative. I was just starting to dabble, and they convinced me that I had to have a colposcopy where they freeze your cervix, and it was horrible experience. It was a horrible experience. It came back normal. I went every 6 months and then every year, and it came back, everything came back fine after that. So whatever it was. But then about 15 years ago, I just stopped having them done, so I don't know. So,
right. Well, I've only had one since Jasper, but all the ones since I was a teenager have always come back weird every single time.
And they're not getting worse, right? They're just like, is it like a, I forget, they stage them, they don't, dysplasia.
I don't know, they always just make me come back in and redo it. That's all I know.
Yeah, we'll get your records. Ask for your records. Tell them you want to know what it's showing, because you want to know if it's a dysplasia that's, you know, there's different levels, right? And if it's just staying the same and it's staying the same and it's staying the same, it's staying the same, not to be concerned. But if it's getting worse, then you definitely want to be concerned, and not to be concerned, but to be, you know, becoming a little more aggressive and take action in protecting your immune system. But since you don't know, I mean, the things I would do would be play around with methylation, but be careful that you don't overstress if you have COMTs. That you don't overstress them. So, just like don't go hog wild and take 5 grams of methylfolate and then become like an angel.
I got this eye twitch. So I got them to give me a shot. They've like formulated a special shot for me with hydroxy and adenosyl and methylfolate that I can mix up at home. And give to myself. Because they don't give it in the clinic. They don't give it with the methylfolate and it's all this stuff I don't want. And so I was like, take action. And I got this weird eye twitch. Like I'd be talking to people and it would be when I was kind of annoyed. And it was like a tell. So every time I would get kind of like edgy, my eye would just be like twitching and twitching.
Probably have some COMTs going on. You're not getting rid of your dopamine and serotonin and catecholamines. Yeah. Interesting. So you may want to have them separated. Yeah. You may want to have the adenosyl, maybe just do the. You can't get folate across the border. Is that the issue? Oh no, that's DHEA.
I've got the folate separate, so I could do it separate.
So you can calm it down and just because the adenosyl and the hydroxycobalamin are not going to do it. But the thing is, if you do have these methylation issues, you're going to want to gradually build up your methyl groups. One way to do it is to just skip, you know, go to the SAMe, because SAMe goes through a back door or whatever to provide those methyl groups. So you can get your methylation met with the SAMe, but then you can teach your body little by little and find your right dose of the methylation of the methyl form for those. In the meantime, the adenosyl is great because it goes right into the mitochondria. The hydroxy gets converted easily.
Okay. That's probably why when I was, like, 21, like, when they first started selling SAMe, I was, like, first in line. I was like, this I need. And it really worked for me. But, I mean, it took time, and it wasn't, you know, a miracle. And so I stopped taking it at a point. That would be why that made me feel better.
That would be why, yeah. Yeah, it gave you some methylation. You could do DNA repair, you know. So if there is some dysplasia going on, you can help with that much better.
Cool. Okay. Thank you so much for this.
You're welcome. Thank you for bringing that question up. And I love when people bring up questions that I don't really know the answer to, because I like to explore the inner workings and, you know, knowledge and try to come up with theories. So,
At least gives me some direction. So,
exactly.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cool.
Bye. Boy, we haven't had any, like, easy stuff today. Oh, no, Valerie had easy stuff. Thank you, Valerie. interesting. Let's see. Anybody else on here? Let's see. What's all the yeses? Yeses. Quotient. Homozygous. Meridian Valley. Let's see. Let's see. Stuff. Let's see if anybody else has anything to do. The neuromethylation cream. I have somebody who started taking it. It's from Neurologics, I think. It could be. It could be a very good way to dose, but again, you just still have to be careful. However you're getting it in, the skin tends to be good if you're having absorption problems. And I haven't had a lot of experience with it, so I don't know for sure. You can't control, of course, when you have combined creams or combined supplements. And I'm a very big fan of starting with smallest doses of things, titrating up, figuring out what the dose that works best is, and if there is a combined supplement, to put it together. People don't necessarily like that all that much just because it's a little bit more cumbersome, but that's the way I do it with herbs as well. There's three or four herbs that I want them to do, and there's lots of, you know, combination formulas with those in it. If they're a sensitive person, I don't know how they're going to react. Who did I say? Did I say anything about Vitex to you? Who was low in progesterone? Yes, you might want to look at Vitex, Allison, as well. That's another thing to help bring up your progesterone. So if you don't want to go, you know, just straight down. I'm not a big fan of going straight down the bioidentical pathway. If you can do it with the herbs, Vitex will help you to make more of the progesterone. And I think that Stephanie might have had low too. Vitex Agnus Castus, that's right. Oh, Numedica. I think that's who it's from. I was thinking Neurologics. Lynn, do you have your line open?
I do. You have a call that started 4 minutes ago.
Oh, shoot. Ah, so all of our people are going crazy listening to all this crazy stuff. I got so carried away with all this stuff that I completely lost track of my time. Okay, well, you guys are welcome to stay on for our next call. Our next call, thank you guys for being patient, is our VLM, which is ERC people, and it's people who are in Before Be Gone and adrenals and all that kind of stuff. So we'll go on to move on to that. All I need is a break to stop the recording on this one and start the recording on that one. So anybody that's been on the INE call, you're totally welcome to listen in or contribute as well. So thank you guys for being here and for this great call today, and we'll talk to you again soon. It went so fast. Bye-bye.